Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to issue 135 of The Bugle, the audio newspaper that proves how worthwhile the Industrial Revolution and two world wars were. Without them, we wouldn't be here. Thanks, guys. You were great. Also, big thank you to people like Homer and Shakespeare who helped make talking so popular. And to all these sperms and eggs who club together to create both us and our audience. You lot are the real heroes. So this is Bugle issue 135, the week beginning Monday, the 29th of November, 2010, with me, Andy Zaltzman, in lovely, lithe, luscious, luxurious London, and in lumpy, lurky, lousy, loathsome Los Angeles, shit pits of the great and famous, it's John Oliver.
Hello, Andy.
Hello.
Hello, Buglers. That's right, I'm in Los Angeles, Hollywood, baby. Woo! I'm going to make you a star, kid. I'm going to make you a star. It's Thanksgiving out here, Andy.
Yep.
The celebration when Americans show gratitude for all they have by attempting to eat most of it over the course of one long afternoon. That is the beauty and the genius of this as a holiday, Andy. It combines a near Buddhist sense of reflection with an all-you-can-eat contest. It is the perfect celebration. Now, on a side note, Andy, to reveal the voter turnout here for the midterm elections was exactly as bad as your worst instincts would have guessed. I think it might be time for all of us to admit that we just don't care about democracy anymore. The longer a country has democracy, the less they care about it. It's very much like owning a goldfish. Sure, they're fun at first, but they quickly turn into a tedious obligation. Oh, the background to that story, Andy, unsurprisingly, is, you know, I had a painful experience with a goldfish as a child. I had a goldfish, and
yep.
My little sister overfed it to death.
Oh,
you're
right.
Only supposed to give them a single pinch of fish food, and she dumped in the whole pot. It wasn't her fault.
Yep.
She was only 3 years old. But it did mean that I came downstairs the following morning to see my fish lying belly up on the surface of the water with a look in his eyes that said, I lack discipline.
So what does goldfish foie gras taste like? I assume you must have given it a go.
Well, it was a complete waste not to. I didn't want fish to have died in vain. That was what I called him, fish. It was in the years before imagination.
Oh, right. Not in tribute to the American tennis player Marty Fish.
No.
So, great. Well, so any exciting stories to tell us? Any massive celebrity encounters this week, John?
No, none, Andy.
All right.
Zero.
Yeah. I can match you for once. Oh, I've also had zero.
But I'm looking at... I don't know if this counts, Andy. I'm looking at a book cover of Andre Agassi. Does that count?
Yeah. Can it talk?
Let me see. Andre, do you feel you retired too early? Nothing, Andy, nothing.
Well, I saw Roger Federer this week in the flesh. So, I mean, I didn't
Did
speak
you really?
To him. Yeah, we went to the tennis at the O2 in London. Free seat upgrade,
wow.
Courtside for Federer against Murray. That man can play tennis,
wow.
John. Yeah.
I've never denied that.
Yeah, but he did not answer my questions as he was playing. Anyway, so...
What were your questions?
My questions are...
What were your questions, Andy?
What are you doing later, Roger? And anyway, in the bin this week. Section in the bin, which we said we've forgotten a bit recently. Anyway, this week, a country music section on this, the 100th anniversary of the birth of Leanne Rimes, the ageless croonstress who discovered the elixir of eternal youth in 1924 and has been romantically linked with every single US president from Calvin Coolidge to Barack Hussein Ali Akbar Obama. We present, in the bin, the official Bugle guide to country music, including how country music saved the world, the full story behind the Bay of Pigs crisis, and how Nikita Khrushchev said he would press the big red button and, in his own words, rip America a big smoky new one, unless JFK granted him a personal audience with Patsy Cline. Khrushchev made Cline sing her hit ditty Crazy over and over again whilst marching around Red Square dressed as Lenin's mummy. 24 hours later, Khrushchev had had his fill and sent a telegram to the White House saying, yeah, on reflection, probably best not to f*** the world to Foxville. I'll keep it in my trousers if you'll keep it in yours. I'm off for a snooze. Love, Nikki K. P.S. Cline was awesome. Also in the country music section, how to talk Emmylou Harris down from a tree. Cat fan Harris loves climbing trees, but has been terrified of heights ever since Graham Parsons fell off a bookshelf whilst trying to impress her in an Albuquerque bookshop. Also, how to break bad news to Garth Brooks. Key is, give him a ball to play with before you tell him, and then follow it up with the words, hey ho, at least you should get a decent song out of it, big stuff. Also, how to resuscitate Merle Haggard if you find him floating face down in a tropical fish tank in an aquarium with a ukulele in one hand and a stingray in the other. And how to tell the difference between the Dixie Chicks from a range of 1,000 metres, particularly useful if you've been hired as a hitman, or let's not be sexist about this, a hit chick, to bump off one but not the other nine. I don't know, how many are there? How many Dixie Chicks are there these days? I know it was laying...
Oh, no idea,
there's
Andy.
Three.
Not
three.
Ten.
I thought it was laying season in October. I don't know if any new Dixie Chicks had hatched or if the bigwigs at Sony just had another omelette. Plus, reviews of the latest country music singles, including File Me for F Under Funeral, I'll Be Dead by Tuesday, by Worrisome Wilmer and the Hypochondriasts. That's the latest from their hit album, It's Almost Certainly Terminal, brackets, and that's probably for the best. Also, we review Brian Strankhorn's new single, If You Told Me Your Real Name Was Nigel, I'd Have Married Someone Else. And also the controversial controversial comeback effort by Blue Glass Regent Shits and Giggles, entitled Hey, That's My Penis. In the bin this week.
Wow. That's a big bullshit start, Andy. You've set a very intimidating pace. That's Can you keep up with that?
That's what happens when I write stuff whilst watching cricket.
Top story this week. Career advice.
Stop
Let's
right
go
there,
to
John.
War.
Stop right there. It's still on. The royal wedding is still on. The cynic said it wouldn't last a week.
God.
It's lasted 2 weeks. This country is back on track. Big day now scheduled for Friday, 29th of April, 2011, meaning that could be a Bugle recording day.
Yes.
So as official podcast of the royal wedding, we will be first on the scene to ask, so Kate, you've caused some controversy by being the first bride at a royal wedding to be wearing a fluorescent pink catsuit. Do you think you'll be the last to allow your wedding dress to be decided by a public vote? Anyway, it's still on, John. It's still on. Carry on.
Was that last joke also written with cricket in the foreground, Andy?
Yep. I think that was written just after Peter Siddle had completed his hat-trick.
Well, Andy, Thanksgiving is all about being grateful for the good things in your life, and the Bugle itself has to be thankful for all those international lunatics whose whack jobbery has proved so inspirational over the last 135 episodes. I believe in Thanksgiving's past, we've already offered up thanks to Hugo Chavez, to Silvio Berlusconi, to Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, and to Captain Crazy himself, Kim Jong-il. But, like clockwork, and almost as a reminder as to who the big daddy of douchebaggery is, Kim Jong-il and his maxi-me offspring, Kim Jong-un, launched an attack on South Korean island this week, killing two civilians and two Marines. Now, South Korean officials described Tuesday's attack as surprising and shocking, and going on to say, we couldn't have imagined they would carry out this kind of grave provocation. Really? Because I could have imagined that. I could have imagined that quite easily. Why could I have imagined that? Because, and how to put this delicately, your neighbours to the north are f***ing nuts. Now, to be fair as well to the North Koreans, this action is entirely consistent with their inexplicably self-destructive behaviour. In fact, I go so far as to say this is one of the least surprising attacks in military history. I'm fairly sure if you live in Seoul and you hear a loud noise outside and someone says, well, that sounds like a car backfired, your first instinct would be to say, don't be ridiculous, it's probably just North Korea firing missiles at us.
Yeah, it's not really what you want. Guests go on Desert Island Discs here on the radio, John, and choose the songs and the one luxury item they'd like to take to a desert island, not many choose as their luxury item an artillery bombardment by the North Korean military, which probably explains why South Korea was pretty pissed off about it in the circumstances. You know, if they just fired in something that people might actually want as their special treat, you know, a snooker table or a lifetime supply of Parma ham or a 3x life-size working robot of Barbara Hershey, then fine. But bombs are a definite no-no. And to me it seems that Kim Jong-il, you know, he's known to be increasingly close to death, maybe thinking about his legacy. You know, he's always wanted to fight the entire Western world. He's like a boxer reaching the end of his career. This could be the last chance where he hangs up his arsenal and retires dead. And, I mean, to be fair, my money would be on the entire Western world to beat him in that fight. So it's not really a match anyone wants to see. But Anyway, good luck to the lad. Good luck.
The only surprise is that this didn't take place along the DM as the demilitarised zone between the two borders. Instead, it was on the disputed maritime border. And of course it's disputed, for a start. It borders with North Korea, and they dispute everything. They dispute whether or not they should have a nuclear weapon. They dispute whether or not their population should be not starving or not. And they dispute whether a fully grown world leader should have a gigantic water slide in his back garden. They just have different views to the rest of us on that. The maritime border is said to be one of the world's most volatile flashpoints. And that is high, high praise indeed. To be placed right up there with the Gaza Strip and with Kashmir is something that both sides should really take a moment to be really proud of.
Well, I think it helps, John, the fact that in North Korea, practically every single place in the country sounds like the sound effect of a ricocheting bullet. And, you know, when the places in your country sound like Pyongyang, Yongpyong, incoming, Ryongchon, Ojoktong, get out, cover me, I'm going in, Ahodong, Tokchon, Kimchaek, Kanggir, tell my wife I love her, Pyongsong, Dwangyang, Kaichon, I'm hit, medic. I guess it's understandable, like, they get a little bit militaristic every now and again.
Now, one of the problems regarding this latest Korean kerfuffle is the rules of engagement that South Korea have been trying to stick by. They are bound, or self-bound, to stay within a sufficient but proportionate response, and that has proven exactly as much of a deterrent as you'd imagine it would. And what has the international response to this been so far? Well, it's been a combination of, really? Oh, for f***'s sake, God damn this, and the most popular, hey, China. You got something to say about this? Hey, don't look out the window, China. I know you can hear me. Do you have something to say about this? China. Hello? Do you know what? It's funny, China, because you could understand me perfectly when we were just talking about trade agreements. Your English was absolutely fantastic then. China!
Yeah, in fact, the official wording of the response to the international community in UN Resolution 1952 has been, oh, what now? You again, you total dick. Followed by Resolution 1953, which reads, yeah, we really mean it this time. We've got other shit to do apart from calling you a total dick, Kim Jong-il. Missile tests, shelling little islands, generally prancing around in uniforms, giving it the big billy bollockheads. Come off it! In sum, if you stop behaving like a total dick, that will be much appreciated, Colonel Dickbag. And also Resolution 1954... Also, Resolution 1954. Oh, so you've got a flashy new nuclear reactor. Well, react to this big horse. And I believe that is the first time in UN history that a Secretary General has drawn a picture of his own extended middle finger in the official text of a Security Council resolution. At least since Dag Hammarskjöld drew two on Resolution 119 to try to resolve the Suez Crisis. One for each side, with swivel on these losers written in English and Arabic.
In fact, the best response that the Chinese Foreign Ministry could come up with was to express concern over the exercises and going on to say, we oppose any act that undermines peace and stability on the peninsula. Now, what you can't hear with that statement when you hear it secondhand is that it was literally delivered through a yawn. They dictated that response, saying, okay, get this down. We oppose any act that undermines peace and stability. On the peninsula, or I don't know, some shit like that. Okay, read it back to me. Actually, do you know what? Don't bother, I really don't want to hear it. Wow, I need a cup of coffee. So, why are North Koreans doing this? Well, you know, that's a hard question to answer. It's like asking, why does that crazy man in the street walk around naked from the waist down, acting like an airplane all day? He has his reasons. But they may not make any sense to you.
Really? Is this you justifying an action that you've never told us about before, John?
He has his reasons, Andy.
Really? Does he? Man in this story?
Really? He does.
Right. And has Bedford Town Centre come to terms with that yet?
They weren't ready for it. They weren't ready for that kind of logic. He was ahead of his time. It's just a shame he had to leave to go to America because of it. Some analysts have been speculating that this is all due to the upcoming leadership transfer in North Korea from Kim Jong-il to his son, Kim Jong-un. And this is bound to be a bumpy transition, as Kim Jong-un has some big, crazy clown shoes to fill. It's like being the son of Michael Jordan or Pele. In fact, the best way of rebelling against his dad would be to become a pragmatic, reasonable leader, guiding his country to a new era of prosperity and improved international relations. That would really piss the old man off. Maybe he could get an earring, too. Other news now, and Ireland is f***ed with a PH. It looks like Ireland is set to take a massive bailout from the EU due to the fact that they are teetering on the edge of a gigantic bankruptcy. What happened, Andy? They had a tiger economy. And maybe a lesson from this should be that we should no longer be naming booming economies after endangered species. If a country was in a polar bear economy, people might behave more cautiously. A truly strong and vibrant economy should only be called a cockroach economy, as in China has now officially become a cockroach economy. That is where the truly safe money should then go. It's good that Ireland are going to stick by the principles that got them into this mess, because they are apparently insisting that their corporate tax regime is an absolute red line that is not negotiable in any bailout. They insist on maintaining the lowest corporate tax rates in the whole of the EU. Why not, Andy? Why not, please? It is technically possible to dig your way out of a hole by continuing to dig down. You just need to make sure that you go around the Earth's core.
Well, they do seem to be applying Sir Isaac Newton's first law of economics here in this bailout, which is that if you throw enough money at a problem, some of it will stick. And Newton discovered this, actually, in his career as a professional food fighter in the mid-17th century. He wrote, if I may quote from my own book, aged 18 in 1661, the Physics Hall of Famer, in his self-published Scientifical, Philosophicans and Economicalist Musings of a Teenage Genius. My humble experience on the semi-professional food fighting circuit informs me that when throwing a substance with the intention of it sticking to an object, what precise object the substance sticks to is a matter of little or no import. It is better for something to stick to something than for nothing to stick to anything. As it is with food, so it is with money, and with paint, and with mud or rumour. This was a lesson well learnt in my losing quarter final at the Bubonics Plague Remedies East Anglian Masters last Whitsuntide, when my careful strategic accuracy with profiteroles was of scant utility against the splattering, splurging blancmange bombardment, which disgorged itself all around me. All around me like the warm engulfing vomit of a chundering dragon from the hands of my rightful vanquisher, Sir Treadwell Helicopter Arms Pluffwick. He completed his dominion of me by leaping off a pommel horse, ululating in his well-benounced Viking style, and hurling an apple from on high onto the crown of my quivering, pudding-smirched bonce. Why, I wondered in my moment of ultimate drubbing, did that fruit hurt quite so much? Seemingly slightly more than the projectile power of Pluffwick's arm alone would merit. Why, I wonder, why?
Things are so bad in Ireland that the boy band Westlife has called for positivity. Nicky Byrne, who, as you know well, Andy, is the blonde, good-looking one, things are very bad, Nicky said. But when things are bad, you need to dig deep and pull together. We're a good enough nation to do that. Oh, God, that's a huge relief, Andy, because Nicky Byrne had been so ominously silent on this issue before, and that was clearly having an adverse effect on the European markets. Hopefully now they'll rebound after these rallying words from the blonde-haired cutie pie. Let's hope this isn't the last economic press conference held by the Aryan heartthrob.
Well, just make you think, if only the US administration back in 2003 had been brave enough to use Debbie Gibson as an intermediary with Iraq, it could have all been avoided.
Well, Westlife's biggest hit, Andy, was notoriously Flying Without Wings, which I really think could be an allegory for the Irish economy during its boom years. It was rising and rising with really little stability to build upon that.
Well, I think the good thing is it does make Ireland cheap for us to buy back and just start gradually piecing our empire back together again, piece by piece. You know, it's certainly in terms of human rights a better way to build an empire than the ones we used before. Just buy it.
That's true, but I'm telling you, India's looking a lot more expensive. So we're going to have to really lowball the f*** out of those guys.
Yeah, they might be buying us in 20 years, I think. Berlusconi news. Silvio Berlusconi is a total penis restorer. It's now official. And thanks for all of those who, many of you brought our attention to this story via Twitter and the emails, the Italian Prime Minister and galaxy-renowned tool has concocted yet more controversy out of thin air by using taxpayers' money to replace a missing penis on an ancient Roman statue. The statue, which featured famously hot Roman goddess and sexbot Venus and war god and pin-up hunk Mars, received a $100,000 sum of public money for its restoration, giving Mars a new thraggle rod and Venus a new hand to stroke it with. Apparently, the prevailing attitude amongst fans and scholars of Wangless classical sculpture is not to replace an absent slap dangle or even a pair of missing curly scranocks. But Berlusconi, who had moved the statues from a museum into his own pad just so he could spend more time looking at it and pretending he'd invited Venus to one of his infamous pool parties, stumped up the Italian public's cash so he could look at a fully scrunchulated groin marble complete with authentic-looking clob.
It's not just a replacement penis, Andy. Yeah. It's a detachable magnetic penis. So that's where the $100,000 of public money has gone. It's a real conversation piece. Right. There's no way that that is not going to be helpful during international negotiations for Italy.
Right.
Why does Point it... is, Silvio Berlusconi.
Why does it need to be detachable? Is it so he can just take it around on any wangless statue?
Because that's what makes it impressive.
Oh, I see, right.
You show them the statue and you say, look, Ambassador, this is 1,800 years old. What a magnificent example of a Roman craftsmanship. And then you can grab the penis and say, what's this? And pull it off. Right. And as I hear, you hand it to the Ambassador and say, do you want to put it back on? If you do, I'm going to need you to drop your trade embargo. And I'm telling you, that trade embargo would be history, because there's not a person alive that does not want to attach, and detach a very old statue's penis.
It's got a USB port in as well. This is pretty good. But what Roman statues, of course, are often one wang short of the full caboodle. The reason being that the most popular prank of the early to mid-second millennium was to give a buddy who had asked for a hot dog a bread roll with a marble pineas instead of a sausage. It was undoubtedly funny, but it did cost many ancient statues their virilitizers. And I guess the question remains, John, the very important question remains, looking at this detachable magnetic penis, is whose wang is it modelled on? Is this Silvio Berlusconi's dick I see before me?
It has to be. Well, he's definitely that narcissistic.
It is hard to imagine a man
There's no question.
It is hard to imagine a man like him would have ordered a new prongler for a statue and not paid the extra $50,000 to have it modelled on his own prongler.
Yes.
So the people...
Yes.
The people of Italy have basically paid $100,000 to have someone carve a cock out of a bit of marble. But not just the people of Italy, John. Not just the people of Italy. The people of Britain via the EU. This is my money that is paid for Silvio Berlusconi to put a marble cast of his own todger on an old statue, and my local council still hasn't filled in last winter's potholes on my road. Is that fair?
That is just the height of leadership arrogance, and I'm sure it's something that he has, to look at any ancient statue and say, wow, I mean, it looks great, but it would look even better with my penis on it.
I guess we will have confirmation whether or not it is Berlusconi's penis if the 1800-year-old statue starts trying to stick its new detachable magnetic Eugene into a much younger statue. Then I guess we'll have our suspicions confirmed.
Berlusconi's architect apparently said there are two philosophies of restoration. One is just to clean the work and leave it as it is. The other involves making the work whole again, without damaging it, to provide an image of the work as it was originally conceived. Well, that sounds great in theory, Andy. I just don't know exactly where a detachable magnetic penis fits into that philosophy.
Next week, Berlusconi attaches detachable magnetic massive tits to the Venus de Milo. Your emails now, and thanks again for your emails and contributions to the @HelloBuglers Twitter feed. In particular, for this email, came in from Amy Carter, who has sent in a I will put it. It's a. How would you describe this? It's Is it the poster from Frank Capra's It's a Wonderful Life? Well, lots of little screenshots from it, but involving us and the American involved in it as well. Who hasn't been on for ages.
It's absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
And the subject line alone is great. She said, "Every time the bullshit flings, an angel gets its wings." And it's so good. I mean, not only should you put it up on the Twitter feed, but I think it should almost be the official Christmas card from the Bugle this year. It's magnificent.
Well, I'll post it on the Bugle Twitter feed.
Do you definitely know how to do that?
Oh, I've done it before, John. F*** you, John. I've done it at least twice, possibly even once. It's going up.
The next email comes from Mark, and he says, "Dear Chris, John, Ped and Andy, in order of who's more likely to survive the Bridge of Death in Monty Python's Holy Grail?" So I'm second there. I'm second. Chris, you're first.
Yes.
And Andy, you're a walking dead man.
Right. Yeah, happy with that.
He goes on to say, "I would just like to say well done on your bullshit talk about the royal wedding in last week's top podcast. How will you ever top that sort of piss-poor news again in your podcast? I can only wonder." Whoa. What, piss-poor news? What's that? I don't understand. Is that some kind of incredibly offensive joke from Mark? Because he goes on to say, "P.S. Andy, stop pretending cricket is a real sport of greatness."
F*** you!
Ouch. Ouch. Well, maybe this will offer you some comfort from that cricket slam, Andy.
Right.
Because Mark cites himself as from the Irish Buglers. Well, not a good time to be an Irish Bugler, Andy.
Yeah, I'll send you a fiver in the post, mate. I'll send you a fiver in the post. With the Queen's face on it. Your future Queen, once we've bought you out. This email comes from someone who signs himself The Herniator. I believe that's Vin Diesel's new film, isn't it? When he suddenly...
It's a lot better, when he gets a hernia.
Goes down in agony. Well,
fight through
mid-fight.
It.
Dear Dick Oliver and Punnery Sergeant Zaltzman, this is on the subject, "Help, I'm trapped in an infinite bugle loop. Last Friday, I eagerly sat down to listen to the 134th edition of your glorious satirical Pod Snorkel." After Pod Snorkel.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
I like that a lot, Andy.
I think, didn't he play for the Springboks in the 1970s? Hikey Pod Snorkel. Anyway, after roughly half an hour, I dutifully followed Andy's instructions and rewound to the beginning of the episode, only to find that another half hour of precision political satire later, "Say it like you mean it, herniator," it was time to do so again. At first, I was thankful for the incredible length of this new breed of bugle, but now it's Tuesday, and I'm beginning to wonder when this will end. As I regularly fast whilst listening to the Bugle, I've had to resort to cannibalising jokes into kebabs to stave off malnutrition. Please send help soon, or my death will be on your hands. I'm terribly sorry.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
All I can...
Careful what you say, Andy.
Yeah. All I can say is maybe you should listen to next week's at increased speed. Maybe just condense it. Can you just speed the whole thing up so it only takes 5 minutes, Chris? Just... really high pitched.
I would happily do that if you wanted me to.
Yeah, I'd love that. I'd love that.
The first chipmunk bugle.
Finally, subject: first shot across the bow from Luke Tucker in Brisbane, in Australia. "Dear Andy and John, being Australian, commiserations. I would like to first offer you the best of luck on Friday for the Ashes. And secondly, I would like to convey how much I would like to see your South Africa-light English team, by that I mean Welsh, crash and burn. As we are taught in primary school that England have betrayed Australia twice, with, brackets, in order of blood-boiling bitterness, one, Bodyline," for our non-cricket following listeners, that was a famous cricket series in the 1932-33 season, in which England bowled fast and hard at Australian people's heads, and which Luke Tucker describes as like a father bowling beamers at their four-year-old child, a beamer being a ball directed straight at the head without bouncing, because the handwriting on his Father's Day card was sloppy. To be honest, it was a legitimate tactic that the Australians just whinged and whinged and whinged about until they all burst into tears and went to bed. And two, Gallipoli. Yeah, fair point on this one. Which led to the slaughter of thousands of Australian and New Zealand troops because the British had never seen a beach before and thought, hey, a beach is a beach. It'll be like a night out in Blackpool. And, well, I've done a gig in Blackpool, and to be honest, it was like a night out in Blackpool. as a sign, certainly after the gig I did. As a sign of peace, I'll give you this piece of information. It seems like Ian Botham has been in Brisbane this week, and no one has yet punched him. Even you must admit that is extremely astounding. Well, I don't see why anyone should want to punch a knight of the realm and one of the greatest heroes this nation's ever produced. I'd like to see more body line, frankly.
Leg theory.
Yeah, that's the polite way of putting it. Heady line. Anyway, best of luck, you losers, in your shitty little hemisphere. Northern Hemisphere rules!
Oh dear. Oh dear.
This hemisphere is so much better than that one, John. So much better. We've produced Da Vinci, Marie Curie, Florence Nightingale,
yep.
The Works.
Yep.
Who have they got?
Yeah.
Kylie Minogue. That's it. That's all they bring to the table.
It's not nothing, Andy.
No, it's something, but it's not enough. Do get your emails coming into thebugle@timesonline.co.uk. Sport now, and well, in the next week, FIFA will decide who hosts the 2018 and 2022 World Cups. England in the running for 2018, and your country, John, the USA, in the running for 2022. Is America excited about this, or has no one noticed?
Number one, baby.
I still think most of America hasn't noticed they actually hosted it in 1994 yet. So,
No, it's a kind of hazy memory.
But here in England, we are getting very excited that we might get to host the World Cup. We're up against a number of other contenders. I'll do quick pros and cons of each contender. Belgium and the Netherlands. Pros, none. Cons, involved Belgium. Historically unable to prevent German victory. Could unleash a new wave of stand-up routines about smoking weed in Amsterdam, with a twist being, what if the world's top footballer smoked weed in Amsterdam before playing the World Cup? What would that be like? Must be stopped.
Oh, strong, Andy. Strong premise.
Russia, pros, might get to see Vladimir Putin fully nude riding a wildebeest at the opening ceremony. Cons, probably a front for taking over Eastern Europe again. Portugal and Spain, pros, none. Cons, could push up the price of Iberico ham. England, pros, greatest nation in the history of the universe, invented football and everything else worth doing in the world, like cricket, snoozing and imperial conquests. Nicest people in the known world, don't speak their own cliquey, clubby language, they speak the language of the world, English. Also, this nation will still be basking in the afterglow of next year's royal wedding. We also keep saving the world from the threat of extremist totalitarian regimes over and over and over again, and we deserve a kickabout in recompense. Cons, would be so awesome that all subsequent World Cups would seem like knitting conventions in a mortuary. So, it's hard to see why FIFA, other than in the obvious endemic corruption problem, would not give it to the UK.
You make a very good bid, Andy. That's a strong bid.
Yep. America is up against Australia, who don't really like football. Mm-hmm. Qatar, who don't really like football. Japan and South Korea, who don't really like football. And America itself, that doesn't really like football. So, here's looking forward to 2022. It's going to be a hoot. It's going to be an absolute... Qatar could be the dark horse there. Basically, the country America's always dreamed of being. Some bits of America, anyway. And in their favour, they have absolutely loads of money and an appealingly jaunty attitude to human rights, which may appeal to FIFA president and wannabe world dictator Sepp Blatter, who recently changed...
Well, yeah, I think that's...
he recently changed...
I mean, that's the cornerstone of their bid.
He recently changed FIFA's motto from, for the game, for the world, to, it's all about the Benjamins.
I think the entire Qatar bidding packet is just one piece of paper with written in solid gold, we got loads of money, mate. Seriously. loads.
So that's it for this week's Bugle.
That's it.
Enjoy LA, John. Are you going surfing after this?
Yeah, of course, Andy. Yep. Surfing with all the other dudes.
Yeah. Is that what? There's a lot of surfing in Los Angeles. I don't hope so.
I have no idea, Andy.
I don't know. Jack Bauer never went surfing.
I have no idea,
24,
but I think there's... Apparently there are some pretty gnarly waves available,
really?
So I'll hope to catch one of those gnarly waves. And
catch it, John.
Do whatever it is that comes naturally. When a man is astride a pointy board.
Have you ever gone surfing since you went to America?
No. Right. No, I haven't. No.
Right. Well, I think you should.
But I'm sure I'd be absolutely incredible at it.
Next film, John. Surfing
Next
Bunny
film.
Movie. How about that?
But the natural extension, I think, is to go from Love Guru to Point Break 2.
So thanks for listening, Buglers. If I can thank you all individually, I would, but I can't and won't. So either accept that or ask your mummy and daddy to impersonate me and give you your own personally tailored message of gratitude. Let me get on with bagging and tagging this podcast. What is it with you people? You sit there in your marbled swimming baths, drinking your jacuzzis and riding your dolphins, and you just expect us to keep chunking out the funny like puppies out of a dog factory. You sit there, stuffing your throats with your nachos, your goldfish caviar, your walrus milk mozzarella, spewing into your Armani chunder buckets and gobbing into your Justin Timberlake memorial spittoons, and you just assume that we just sit down at computers and write this stuff. Well, we f***ing don't. God tells us what to say, word for f***ing word. About 120 words per minute, which is quite hard to keep up sometimes, so it explains why we might misquote him sometimes, just like the Bible writers did. Don't eat what, and what, Lord? So, hang on, can you repeat that, please? Cut off, cut what, bit off our what? Old John's gone. Oh, well, what a way to end. What a way to end this podcast. It seems entirely appropriate. I was mid-bullshit. I've got to go and pick my kids up from nursery. So all I can do is hope that we hear from John again, and that wasn't the sound of him being bumped off by the CIA. And we'll be back next week with another bugle. Bye-bye.